Portrait on October 17th through the 19th, and The History and Harvesting of Clay on October 22nd, both held at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you. And in just a bit, we're going to be going live with headlines here on the Wednesday morning show. And we're just here for another hour. Then we're going to hand things over to Kari Headland for Headwaters. So you'll want to tune in for that. And don't forget, there's some live music going on this week. Wusso's 1 week live. Multiple bands each night at Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth. Now, time for headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The Gaza ceasefire is strained. Israel says one of the 8 bodies handed over by Hamas this week is not that of a hostage. Israel has closed the Rafah crossing into Gaza today. That will limit aid getting to Palestinians. Israeli hostages and Palestinian detainees freed in the ceasefire are sharing details about their treatment while they were held. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more.
Israeli medical staff say freed hostages are in better health than expected. One suffered an eye injury. Some said they were starved and shackled. Former hostage Yair Horn saw his brother freed now and thanked President Trump.
Thanks to you, I'm standing here today, and thanks to you, my little brother is finally home.
One family said the Israeli military bombarded close to where their son was held in the final days of the war. In Gaza, journalist Islam Ahmad was detained in Israel for about 10 months. He told NPR he was beaten and lost about 30% of his body weight. Other freed Palestinians showed signs of abuse and malnutrition. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The federal government shutdown is hurting some local businesses that rely on federal workers to stay afloat. From member station KUER, Macy Lipkin reports from Ogden, Utah, the U.S. Treasury Department is the largest employer in that city.
The Department of the Treasury is the largest employer in the city. The majority of its more than 7,000 employees work for the IRS. That agency has furloughed almost half its workforce in the shutdown and sent layoff notices to about 1,500 more. Dan Martinez is legislative coordinator for the local chapter of the Treasury Workers Union. He's been at the IRS for 18 years.
These are not millionaires that are making money off of the government. These are folks that have taken a duty to serve the American people, have taken that oath of office.
He says uncertainty and DOGE cuts have made his colleagues more careful with their spending. For NPR News, I'm Macy Lipkin in Ogden, Utah.
Former special counsel Jack Smith has spoken publicly about political attacks on his former team. Smith led the federal prosecutors who twice obtained indictments against Donald Trump. Smith spoke yesterday at the University College, London.
These are team players who don't want anything but to do good in the world. They're not interested in politics. And I get very concerned when I see how easy it is to demonize these people for political ends, when these are the very sort of people I think we should be celebrating.
Smith highlighted the U.S. Justice Department's recent indictments of former FBI Director James Comey and current New York Attorney General Letitia James. On Wall Street in pre-market trading, Dow futures are up by more than 200 points. NASDAQ futures are up by more than 250 points. You're listening to NPR. Puerto Rico's Territorial Senate has passed legislation that would significantly slow down the release of information from the local government. A coalition of journalists, free speech activists, and the Puerto Rico Bar Association have strongly objected. They say the bill would double the amount of time Puerto Rican officials have to respond to information requests. They say it would allow Puerto Rico's government to decide what information to disclose. A judge in Texas is blocking key parts of a state bill. It seeks to limit expression on public university campuses after dark. Houston Public Media's Bianca Seward reports.
In his ruling, U.S. District Judge David Allen Ezra said, quote, "The First Amendment does not have a bedtime of 10 p.m. The law imposes several restrictions during the last 2 weeks of a semester, including banning amplified sound, speaker events, and overnight encampments. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, also known as FIRE, sued the University of Texas system on behalf of several student organizations. J.T. Morris is a senior supervising attorney with FIRE.
Court applied the principles it should have, and the analysis was very sound, so we're pleased with it.
FIRE is now seeking a permanent injunction. I'm Bianca Seward in Houston.
Conditions in parts of western Alaska remain dire. The remnants of a typhoon hit the state last weekend. One person was killed and two more remain missing. Alaska officials say that some people who survived had to cling to debris as their homes washed away. Hundreds of people fled their homes to shelter. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
Don't make
And that was from our album of the week. The album is Hallelujah, Don't Let the Devil Fool You by Robert Finley. It is the fifth album from the Louisiana Bluesman and inspired by Finley's days as a street performer when he would improvise off topics from the crowd. The album was fully improvised and recorded in one day at Auerbach's Easy Eye Studios, Auerbach from the Black Keys. And that song was I Want to Thank You. Let us know what you think of the album of the week. Text us at 218-326-1234. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Jen Kellen. It is 8:11 on this Wednesday morning show. And now it's time for our monthly segment, Twist and Sprout, where we talk with a couple Beltrami County Master Gardeners. Dan Sherman and John Reff join us today to talk about putting away the garden. Good morning, John. Good morning. And Dan.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, putting away the garden. It's the leaves are falling. It's time to start putting away the garden. Why do we need to do this?
Well, it looks better if it's all. my wife is from good German stock from central Minnesota, and the fields have to be completely clean at this time of year, including my garden.
So what does it mean to put away the garden?
I mean, it's cleaning up, getting rid of things. Dan's a real gardener. I'm just a pot gardener. Well, pot gardener. Container gardener. Let's get that straight right away. So it's a little different. You know, he's got a lot more work than I do. I can do my cleanup and everything in about a week.
Do you clean up your pot, like physically wash things for
absolutely.
Next year?
Yeah. Okay. You know, if you have small pots, I dump them out entirely.
Okay.
Save the soil. Dispose of the root balls and everything else. If they're big pots, I will take out like 2/3 of the dirt and put it in a pile and save it for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, clean out the pots, get a 5-gallon bucket and maybe a splash or two of bleach. That's
mm-hmm.
all you need.
Mm-hmm.
Clean out the inside, clean out the outside. Excuse me. Just gets rid of all the little fellas that are planning on spending winter there.
And taking
and
down
and
next
also,
year's crop.
Also, the other thing to remember is you should clean your tools, too, when you're all
mm-hmm,
done.
Mm-hmm.
Prevent a holdover of those little things and microbes and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
So how do you get rid of the root bulbs? Like, do you destroy them?
No, if you have an opportunity or a place to compost them,
okay.
That's by far the best. If you don't have that, then, yeah, you dispose of them properly. You put them in the garbage can. And away they go. I do most of mine get composted.
And you've got a bigger project, Dan, because you've got a garden.
And I try to keep as much organic matter as I can. The corn stalks, I try to bury them. I like to do composting in place where I dig a trench and I put everything I can in. And the squash vines... corn stalks after I've had a nice corn shuck up by the road. I have one now. It's always good to reuse that stuff, but the exception is tomatoes. You know, tomatoes quite often get a blight, and there's four or five types of blight, and you normally have some of them somewhere, and you're lucky. If you get a good crop, you're pretty good, but I get those out of the garden. Mm-hmm. I put them in the tall weeds out.
You don't even compost them?
No. No, I'm concerned that will continue in and when I use the compost. And
got it.
Yeah.
So with the weather like this, is it a problem? Like, do you have to wait? Like, let's say, because it's supposed to, like, rain and thunderstorm tonight. Do you have to wait till it dries up to start putting away, or does it not matter?
I don't like to walk in the soil or work the soil when it's wet. You lose your soil structure. The structure is how the particles of sand, silt, and clay stick together in clumps. And when you have good soil structure, the water goes through both down and back up again. So I really like to avoid squishing the soil and destroying that structure.
Okay, so if you are planning to put away your garden, maybe wait a couple days after this rain that we're supposed to get tonight and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And it depends on your location and your type of soil, too. You know, if you're in sandier, you can handle a little bit. And it's been so dry this fall that, you know, if we just get a half an inch or something, you'd be okay. If we get a real gully washer, then you're going to have to wait for it to dry out.
half an inch is good maintenance, but you may want to water. I want my trees and bushes to have plenty of water going in so that they can, they're not stressed going into winter.
Yeah, that's a good point, Dan. It's nothing really to do with cleanup or anything, mm-hmm. but just to let everybody know that if you plant a new trees this year, be sure and really, really soak them well. 5 gallons of water a week just to help them get ready for the wintertime. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very important.
So
and there are I'm sorry.
Should you do that throughout the week or all at once 5 gallons of water?
You know, if you do it throughout the week, you're probably only going to get the water down 2 or 3 inches, and tree rip balls are at least a foot deep. So I would put the whole 5 gallons on at one time over the course of a half hour or so.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, you got to really soak them so it gets down deep. Really concerned about what's going to happen next year with trees. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of trees that people have staked up that are looking okay, and hopefully they will do all right. But my feeling is that they probably won't make it through the winter. We'll see. It's going to be tough next year.
Why do you think that?
I think they were stressed too much with the big wind. The fine root fibers were all destroyed. They're pulled apart and they're tipped over. People bring them back and hopefully they'll start to get reestablished, but it's going to be a long haul. I don't think we've seen the end of it yet.
Mm-hmm. I'd be real careful with the trunks of trees. If you have trees less than 5 inches in diameter, I would wrap those to make sure that a buck doesn't use it, buck deer doesn't scrape on it. And I've had some damage, and once it's done and you can't do anything, they can really scrape a lot of bark off. Mm-hmm. And if you can wrap that with a tree wrap, and I would spray it with a deer repellent, a plant skid or liquid fence or something like that, so that they don't scrape up the trunks.
Does plant skid or liquid does that work on mouse damage? If mice if you do down low where the mice will girdle, okay.
That has helped a lot. A lot of my trees are getting enough bark that now that it's not going to be a problem, but it's too late when you come out in the spring and you see it's already done. So you've got to get on those. I have had a lot of vole damage. They come in, and one time the snow was pretty deep, and they went above the area that I had wrapped and girdled it up there, too.
Yeah, so, and that might be an issue post-storm as well, if people had planted replacement trees and they're younger trees and not used to taking care of young trees.
Yeah.
Good reminders.
So for putting away a garden, when is it too late to put away a garden?
When you can't put a shovel into the ground because it's frozen.
When it's frozen, you've missed it.
There's a lot of flowers that need to be dug up in the fall and keep the bulbs. My list here again includes dahlias, cannas, gladiolas, other non-wintering bulbs and corms. The calla lilies, I've had those. We had those for our wedding, and I still have the same stock that I keep planting, but I bring them in every year.
Yeah.
And then plant them out in the spring again and keep them in a cool, dry place, and they'll be good for next year.
Mm-hmm. And the opposite end of that is there are some flower bulbs that want to be planted in the fall that you're putting in the ground and not taking out.
Well, the tulips and daffodils should be planted. I planted them at the same time as garlic, and it's time to have the garlic in the garden. If you don't have it, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's one person who's taking their time with their garlic.
I'm planting my garlic this afternoon.
By her own admission, there, I still have a lot of stuff to do on my garden too.
You know it's too late, Andrew, when you're standing out there and it's snowing and the ground's freezing, which I have may or may not have dug potatoes in the snow before, but. No, okay.
So, just curious, what is, like, the science behind why these plants you should plant in the fall and then they'll be ready next year? Like, what are they getting during the winter season? Like, how are they surviving?
They're getting an advantage of getting the roots established in the fall. And so that as soon as it's ready in the spring, they're going to be growing out their roots and starting to develop their tops. before he can get into the garden, and it gives him a big jump start for next year. It's the way they were growing in natural systems, and we're just going on top of that. Be natural with it.
One of the other things is if you plant them in the fall, if it's a fall bulb, we plant it in the fall, it'll bloom earlier in the spring. If you plant in the spring, therefore flowers later into the season, into the fall season.
Fall is a good time to be fertilizing. I've fertilized mine about a month ago. It looks really great now, but I like fall fertilizing better than spring fertilizing, because in the spring you have you're fertilizing the weeds. At this time of the year, the weed seeds know that they don't want to sprout right now. So it all goes into the grass, and my lawn looks better than ever.
What about, do you fertilize trees this time of year, or is that...
I'd be really careful with that, because it might, they might try to grow.
Okay. So I've, water, but hold off on the fertilizer.
I've never had any luck fertilizing trees at all. So.
Okay.
They're on their own.
There's some controversy about whether or not we want to cut the tops off. The tops sometimes harbor harmful insects, but they also harbor beneficial insects. And I think what the university is recommending is to cut the tops off of your herbaceous perennials, not the woody perennials, about 8 or 10 inches off, and keep the tops and put them near your garden, not where they're going to get decomposed, but the plant, the beneficial insects can emerge from that.
Can go back.
A number of pollinators like to have, like to plant inside the stem.
I have a question, if I can put you on the spot. My peonies this year, because it was so wet early, terrible powdery mildew. How do I get those through? Should I cut that foliage and stuff? I don't want to spread that mildew. I don't want it to still be there for next year. Cut that stuff off and get it out of there?
For that part that was mildewed?
Yeah, all the foliage and stuff. Just definitely. Get it out of there. Can I spray anything on what's left?
I don't know.
I've read about milk, because the lactic acid in milk is supposed to get rid of mildew.
Mildew is a difficult thing, and it's going to be in the ground anyway. I don't have a good answer for you.
Okay, no. I'll keep digging
this
winter.
I've got, in my little wildflower area, I have one plant that gets mildew every year, and I try the same thing. But this time of the year, I'll cut it down to, you know, about an inch or so off the ground, and dispose properly of the mildewed part. But and it comes up in the spring, and it looks really good. And then about the middle of July, it starts to mildew again, and I can't get rid of it.
Huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, no,
but it's just
tricky.
One plant.
So. Okay.
And everybody else around it is just fine. So.
If you have house plants, you might want to be sure to bring those in. I've been growing the same Diplodina for about 5 years now. I've kept it over winter. It doesn't look good during the winter time. Comes back every year, and it's blooming about fair time. One year, they had some orange ones, and they haven't had them before. They didn't have them since. And this one is doing pretty well.
Oh, cool.
I have some chrysanthemums that are just starting to bloom now, too. Oh. I'm thinking I might do that.
Yeah.
A lot of the... chrysanthemums that are for sale locally are made for pots and cut flowers. But there are, the University of Minnesota has developed some really good chrysanthemums that are very hardy. I'm watching the temperatures there, and hopefully I can get those last few buds to come out. It bloomed early in the spring, and it's blooming now.
If you're doing herbs, a couple things you can do. A lot of people will bring some of their plants indoors to winter, and like Dan says, you got to be clean them all off, get rid of any little bugs that might be there. Sometimes new soil is a really good idea. I don't overwinter any of my herbs. I just harvest them all, and you still have time to harvest some of them. Some of them are too late because, you know, the little frost we had last week kind of killed some of them. But the thyme, oregano, rosemary, marjoram, some of those are still good-looking plants. cut them off, let them dry up a little more, and harvest them all.
There's nothing better than herbs you've grown and dried yourself.
It just tastes. I got things all over the porch inside the house. My wife loves it.
And John, you're collecting a lot of wildflower seeds at this time.
Yes, yeah, this is a good time of the year now to collect wildflower seeds. If you're going to do that, be careful where you harvest them from. Off your own property is by far the best. I don't know if you want to harvest some of your neighbors, should let them know ahead of time.
Hey, what are you doing there?
Just getting a few seeds. And never take off more than a third of the plant. But they're all ripe now this time of year, so it's a good time. A lot of them, the way I do it, I will pot them all in like a 2 gallon or 1 gallon container separately, because next spring when they start to pop up, if you plant them in the yard, you have no idea what they are.
Right.
And they all look the same. They all look like weeds.
And you think you're going to remember.
Yeah, and you think, and you don't. And then, by the way, you should always mark them with a permanent marker.
Yes.
Last year, I marked some of them with a non-permanent marker. And, of course, this year, I got plants in my garden. I have no idea what they are. But they're looking good, so they can stay. But, yeah, and so I pot them. I'll pot them now and let them freeze, and they'll stay outdoors all winter long. And then next spring, they will just start to pop up.
And a lot of those seeds need a cold period. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They need that.
A lot of them
cold.
Need that. Huh? Mm-hmm.
So with the seeds, you're putting the garden away in October. You're already thinking about buying new seeds in January. When does the gardener get to take a break?
The gardener or the gardener?
Gardener.
We have different things during different seasons. At least in the wintertime, we don't have to pull weeds. And things aren't. It's a reading season.
Yeah.
And next month, we're going to be talking about some books to read about gardening. Look forward to presenting that for you. But I like to read, but I can't read during the summertime.
No, right.
There's just...
Well, I can. I get a hammock out there, and I'm ready to read all day. So, also, though, the Master Gardener Hotline, that is on break during this time of year. Is that correct?
We're still going now.
Still going?
A couple more weeks, and then we will shut down and start up again in end of April.
Okay.
So, yeah, if anybody has questions or anything.
Well, you can text your questions to us. We could keep them on file here, 218-326-1234. We'll present a big list to you guys in the spring.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Dan and John, for joining us this morning. We will have you on next month to talk books then.
Perfect. All right. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. We're going to play a tune for you. This is a new one from Chawa. This song is called Why You Want to Do Me Like That.
Right off of my back. Why you wanna do me like that? Gave you every last dollar, every last dime. Even made you bail when you were doing time. You turned my house right into a shack. Why you wanna do me like that? Who needs friends when you got enemies like these? Heaven help 'em. Heaven help 'em. Please. Well, if you don't know now, you're about to learn. Cause every bridge I'm about to burn, you can scream and yell, but step on back. Why you wanna do it like that? I'm gonna be your shadow every day. And if you try and run, I'll block your way. Gonna rule the day you cross this cat. Why you wanna do it like that?
make you wish out loud. Leave the gree-gree on the ground. Why you wanna do me like that? Why you wanna do me like that? Why you wanna do me like that? Why you wanna do me like that?
And that was Chawa with Why You Wanna Do Me Like That, featuring Irma Thomas. Here on the Wednesday Morning Show, I'm Andrew Zingle here with Jen Kellen. We receive support from the Watermark Arts Center in downtown Bemidji, with exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. WatermarkArtsCenter.org.
We also received support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
And our special guest has entered the building, so that announcement is coming up in just a bit. But first, it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. A Hibbing man is in critical condition after his home exploded Sunday evening. The Hibbing Fire Department responded to the incident on 9th Avenue East just before 7 p.m. and found the home engulfed in flames. Dave Peterson was transported to Fairview Range Medical Center in Hibbing for treatment and is now fighting for his life at the Hennepin County Medical Center in Minneapolis. A GoFundMe started by his family says Peterson lived in the home with his wife Missy and 4-year-old grandson. The explosion leveled the home and the fire spread to a house next door, causing extensive damage, according to friends of the Northland Firewire. The cause of the explosion is under investigation. Firefighters continue to strengthen containment lines and address hotspots in the wildfire burning in George H. Crosby Manitou State Park. Officials announced Saturday that the fire was caused by a lightning strike. The Crosby Fire has grown to 300 acres since it began last Wednesday. Its size has remained steady since Sunday. Crews have established lines around 85% of the fire as of Tuesday morning. Favorable weather has assisted firefighting efforts, with rain expected Wednesday night. Tenants in Bemidji are banding together to form an alliance in a city that largely rents. Larissa Donovan attended their first meeting and has more.
Bemidji's need for more affordable housing has dominated local studies and surveys for years, with the Headwaters Regional Development Commission releasing a comprehensive housing study last month. The study confirmed what is anecdotally known across nonprofits and government groups. The community has a high poverty rate and aging housing stock. The study also found that while 70% of Beltrami County's residents own their home, that statistic is nearly reversed for the county seat of Bemidji, around 60% of the residents rent. These factors played a role in 24-year-old Brady Crosby forming what is, for now, called the Bemidji Tenants Union.
We're now a majority renter community. Another thing is, I just think there's a lack of accountability. There's only one seat at the table right now, and that's just for the landlords.
During the initial meeting Thursday, Crosby and co-founder Reed Olson described the next steps for the group, including a possible name change and forming a nonprofit. The group is anticipated to begin selecting members for its board of directors at its next meeting, slated for 5:30 p.m. Wednesday, November 12th at the Bemidji Public Library. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension ordered law enforcement agencies across the state to suspend using the Data Master breathalyzer test until the machines were inspected. The requirement Friday follows the discovery of multiple data entry errors related to the dry gas cylinders used in the machines, according to a news release. This follows reporting by the Minnesota Star Tribune that found that hundreds of tests may have been compromised due to the error, including in Aiken County. In a Monday press conference, BCA Superintendent Drew Evans says the action was out of an abundance of caution.
This is a bit nuanced and technical. It doesn't necessarily mean, even if there were errors, that the test results themselves were not reliable.
One driving while intoxicated case in Aiken County was dismissed, and others may be challenged due to the error. On the heels of the Trump administration laying off federal workers during the government shutdown, some state workers in Minnesota watch with worry. The budget stalemate in Washington is trickling down to the state level in situations where a state office gets federal funding to carry out a certain function. That includes workers who look over applications for disability claims covered by Social Security. Lisa Becker reviews these claims for the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. She points out that a temporary layoff for her would be devastating to the clients she assists.
How long is that going to delay decisions for people who need answers for their physical and mental health care needs?
Becker says even if she were laid off for a day or two, pending benefit claims would likely be pushed back longer due to scheduling conflicts for doctor's exams. State officials say available federal funds will prevent staffing disruptions for this service until October 27th. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with the franchise Jen Kellen. We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement. Dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
Support also comes from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And as promised, we are joined by a very special guest in our live studio. Live studio, is that?
Yeah.
I guess it's correct.
We're joined, right. She's live.
I was going to say studio audience, but there is no studio audience. So I guess we're the audience.
And we have a giant announcement to make.
Absolutely.
We've been talking about it all morning.
So welcome to the show. Our special guest today, the one and only Heather Johnson.
Yay. The one and only. Good morning. Oh my gosh. What? That was a huge buildup. Now I feel like.
So you better have a big announcement for us.
Oh, I get to make the whole announcement?
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Why not? You're well, the special guest.
Right. All right. Well, this is fantastic.
Why we brought you in.
Well, I want to let everybody know that we're having an event here in Bemidji.
An event, you say?
An event. On Wednesday, October 29th. So mark your calendars, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the 29th. We'll be at Bridget's Pub, and we're doing a little game we're calling Guess the Groove.
What?
Andrew is feigning surprises. It's very convincing. Oh, here we go.
So what's going to be happening?
All right. Well, we're going to play a clip of a song.
Uh-huh.
And then participants are going to make their guess. So it's sort of like your regular trivia, except you're going to guess the song and the artist. So 2 points are available for each song clip. You'll want to be in a team. Teams are maximum of 5 people. And I think we decided that 13 teams.
Yeah, that's what we decided. 13 teams seems like a good amount. Mm-hmm. It's can get pretty packed there in Bridget's.
Yeah,
so.
Probably about as many as we can cram in there. So get your team together. And then, yeah, we have some prizes to give away. And it's just going to be a really fun night.
Yeah, and each round is going to cover a different decade of music, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And then the last round will be 2000s to now, which is 25 years, but that's
kind of a
how
speed
the
run
math
there.
Works.
That is how the math works. So we are starting in the 60s then.
Yes.
All right.
So this is not going to be like, oh, if you just know classic tunes, you're going to be set. No,
yeah.
You want to get a well-rounded team of all the eras of modern pop music.
You got to know a lot of music.
You got to know a lot of music. And I know there's some rumblings going around about, we know someone who might show up.
Oh, yes.
Who would be very good at this game. His name is Ziggy. How are we going to compete with Ziggy?
Well, we have a plan for that.
Whoa.
We do. You want me to tell the whole story?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so because somebody is way too smart for our game, probably, and a very beloved person here in Bemidji, we'll be handing out two Ziggy tokens to each team, right? Two tokens. And this is sort of your phone a friend opportunity. Mm-hmm. So you can turn in a Ziggy token and get advice from Ziggy if you're stuck on one of these songs.
Uh-huh.
But you only get two.
And out of 50 questions.
Oh, they're going to be 50. Okay, wow.
Yeah, 10 songs per round.
Per decade.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, 25 years.
So that's a little extra.
Lifeline.
A little extra fun. You get to talk to Ziggy, and it's gonna be a great night.
Yeah, and portions of the drink sales will be going to our station, which is incredibly helpful for us. Yeah. So even if you don't want to, if you're not interested in playing the game, still come down, meet your fellow KBXers, and grab a drink or whatever, and
Support the station.
Support the station.
Yeah, we'll all be there. I think all of us here at KBXE. So. It'll be
fun.
A lot of fun.
Right. Yeah. October 29th, you said. So that's 2 days before Halloween.
Yes.
So
costumes are encouraged.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
I know. Jen wears a costume every day of October. You can't tell because it's the radio, but she's actually a big silver robot right now.
When else am I going to use the silver shoebox?
I mean, of course. Next Halloween, probably.
And I don't know if you were listening earlier, we kind of spoiled Andrew's Halloween costume this year.
Oh, no.
It was Julia Child.
No.
Oh, please, please, please make that happen.
Yes, and you're going to wear your
Letterman jacket.
He's going to be the young Andrew.
No,
yeah,
no,
what if
please.
I was young Andrew?
Please be Julia Child. This would make my entire year.
That would be fantastic.
So October 29th, Wednesday, we would love to see you there. Come in, support us and during these difficult times. And it will be it's a volunteer, not volunteer, a member appreciation week.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, we have lots of fun things cooking. So we'll be rolling all of that out for you to see what's going on air or in your community. I know Grand Rapids has an event, too, but I don't want to spoil that. I'm going to let them announce that
big
one.
Reveal.
Yeah.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us for this big announcement day.
Yes.
Thank you
and
for having me.
We look forward to seeing everybody at Bridget's on the 29th.
Yeah, it
should
be fast.
Absolutely. So we're going to play a tune for you now. This is the band Dry Cleaning. This song is called Hit My Head All Day.
Life, a series of memorials and signals, telling us this or that, telling us this or this. Think of that. The objects outside the head control the mind to arrange them. Different places.
And that was Dry Cleaning with Hit My Head All Day here on the Wednesday Morning Show. Coming up next is Area Voices. We receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, a broadband cooperative featuring all fiber optic GigaZone internet speeds up to 10 gig and local customer service. Learn more at paulbunyan.net.
Programming on KXC is supported by The Rife in Grand Rapids, presenting the Mississippi Hot Club for its Cozy Concert Series, November 2nd at 2 p.m. The group performs jazz and swing selections. Details are at therife.org.
Time now for Area Voices. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Recently, I had the opportunity to take Area Voices on the road, all the way to Reamer, to meet the artist Cheyenne Renee, who has a very interesting project where she is creating 50 different murals for 50 different states. For Minnesota, she selected Reamer and was creating a mural outside of the Rusty Bucket, and we had a chance to sit down and talk about how she got interested in art and what it means to travel to all these different communities, leaving your art on display. Here's Cheyenne Renee talking more about the project.
So the 50 and 50 project is a mural project that I came up with in 2022 as a way for me to focus on art full time and be able to travel across the country, but to blend my passions together. And I was really interested in learning more about economic development and tourism in small communities. So that's a big part of the project, is highlighting small towns and communities in each state. So I'm painting one mural in one small town in all 50 states.
So how do you go around deciding which cities to paint a mural at?
I have a section on my website where people can nominate towns. A lot of people nominate their hometown. And then I also have a community of people that follow along on places like Facebook and Instagram. So I have a lot of comments or people that reach out and message me nominating their, you know, small towns that they've gone through. And then basically I go online and I try and get connected with the local chamber of commerce or a nonprofit or organization in the town, pitch the project to them, and then get connected with the right business or client.
So this is a double question. What was your first state that you did, and how many states have you done so far?
So my first state was Virginia, and I painted in Covington, Virginia, which is my hometown. And then I am currently on state number 30, which is Minnesota.
So with this kind of project, having to come up with 50 different murals, how is your creative process work? Like, how do you decide what's going to go on each mural?
It's been really different in each location. The way that I set the project up, I try to be as flexible for whoever I end up working with. So it depends on what wall I'm working on and what business I work with. So sometimes they have something really specific in mind, and then sometimes they just want me to come and be inspired by the landscape and create something that I'm inspired to create. But a lot of the times, and something that I focus on a lot specifically, is highlighting things within the mural that are going to be relevant and meaningful to the community that has to see them the most.
With having such, because you're trying to complete this project within by the end of the year, correct? So with that quick of a turnaround, like, that doesn't give you much time to think about, like, what you're going to paint. So I'm just curious, for that, as you as an artist, are you accustomed to having these kind of quick turnarounds of coming up with ideas and creating them in a short span of time?
Yeah, definitely. It's been an adjustment for me. Traveling and doing this full time and putting all of my effort into it has kind of, I'm excited to do it and I wake up excited to do it. So that helps me have the energy to kind of keep going. Some of the murals, I have actually been in contact with those locations for over a year and a half, and it's this back and forth of trying to find the right wall and right imagery. And then sometimes it's as quick as I'm meeting a client, they say yes, and I'm working on a mock-up design, and within 24 hours I'm painting. So yeah, I have to learn to be flexible.
So this is a question I ask for everyone I interview on this program. Do you remember when you first got interested in art?
It's a great question. I think I was always a kid that liked to draw. And then I think around the age of 11 or 12, I saw Bob Ross painting really late one night on TV. And that was the first time that I had ever picked up acrylic paints and started painting on canvas, like with intention other than elementary school art. So I think that made it accessible and made me interested in wanting to practice and spend time doing it on my own.
So how did you make the leap to murals? Because that's something I'm always fascinated about, because it's, gosh, such a large scale project. How did you get into making murals?
It was a little accidental. I started doing commission canvas work in my hometown, and then I tried to be involved in anything that I could in my teenage years that involved art. So people started asking me to paint their windows at Christmas time. So that was larger scale, and I got used to that, and I really enjoyed the speed that you have to paint when you paint a window or something like that for someone. And then when I started doing murals, everything kind of clicked together. I was able to achieve the imagery that I wanted a little easier when I work large scale. So I think for some people, it just like there's some artists that work micro, I think some artists can visualize things on a larger scale.
What has been like the biggest one you've worked on so far?
The biggest one that I've gotten to work on, there's one in my hometown that I did that's 450 feet long, but so far for the project, the largest one has been in Ronan, Montana, and I did that as a collaboration. And I don't know the exact dimensions of that, but it's a three-story tall building and it's very long.
So when setting up these projects with the communities, like what's kind of the setup for, like do they help you find a place to stay while you're here, or like what kind of planning do you have to do when you're coming into these towns?
For each location, it's been really different. So I enjoy traveling in all facets, so I'm really happy to ebb and flow as I need to. Sometimes I stay at state park campgrounds. Sometimes it's as easy as I park my RV or my camper truck in somebody's parking lot for a few days while I'm working. And then sometimes I get blessed to have a hotel or Airbnb that somebody pays for or that I'm able to pay for through the project.
So let's talk about the one you're working on here in Reamer. Maybe describe what you're creating on this mural and how you came up with this idea for specifically for Reamer.
Yeah, so the one that I'm working on here is a 10 foot by 15 foot, and they built a billboard for me to paint. And they wanted something that was colorful and highlighted the landscape and wildlife here. So it's going to be a sunset scene with a large bald eagle, and we're going to hide a little Bigfoot silhouette in there somewhere because that's kind of becoming a mascot of the town. So yeah, I wanted to do something bright and colorful and do some elements like a sunset and a lake, which are just really fun for me to paint, but they were going to be also relevant to the people here.
So with these quick turnarounds, what would you say has been some like the challenges of having like such quick deadlines with these, with some of the mural projects?
I kind of like the excitement of all of it. I think that the only challenge I've really run into is sometimes if weather is against me, that can make it hard with scheduling if I have a next destination that I need to get to. And then other than that, it's just leaving these places. When I come in for such a short period of time, I really get to meet some amazing people, and the communities are always so welcoming. It is hard sometimes to say goodbye. I want to spend more time in those places.
So for most artists, creating art, maybe you show it to friends, maybe you show it at like at an exhibit or in a museum kind of thing, but you're kind of leaving a mark in 50 different states. What's that like for you as an artist to know that your work is like you're leaving a mark on across the country?
Yeah, that's also a really big question. I don't know. I feel like I'm dreaming sometimes, when especially this year when I've gotten to go to so many places and the trip itself has been so wonderful. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that exactly. I do think that for the documentary and this project, the idea that hopefully I'll inspire people to go to these towns and go visit the murals, that's exciting for me to know that there's people that are following along that eventually might get to see these murals in person and kind of experience part of what I'm getting to experience.
Yeah, so maybe let's talk a little bit about the documentary project. Talk about what it is and what it's called and like kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah, so when I came up with the idea for the project, I thought, what better way to highlight all of these communities than to film a documentary introducing people to this way of travel and the small towns that are kind of tucked away across the country. So the documentary will be called the 50 and 50 Project documentary, and it'll be public for free for anybody to view on my website. My goal is to have it out within 6 months of completing the final mural. But the project, the documentary, is going to be focused less about the artwork and not so much about me, and more about these communities and why it's important to think differently about how we travel and taking our time across the country, how that can impact small communities and small businesses.
And so how can people follow along on your journey?
The best way to follow along is on my website, which is CheyenneRenee.com, or on my Facebook or Instagram, which you can find me. If you use the hashtag 50 and 50 Project, you'll be able to find me.
Cheyenne Renee has been my guest today. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. And that is Area Voices today here on the Wednesday Morning Show. Coming up next is Headwaters with Kari Hedlund. I'm Andrew DeZingo here with the franchise, Jen Kellen.
We receive support from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, open Wednesdays and Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Golf Course Road and Pokegama Avenue, offering an EBT double match and many more programs bringing produce to members of our community. More at grfarmersmarket.org.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. And looking at weather today, mostly cloudy, highs near 57 degrees, southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, showers are likely with the possibility of thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with lows in the high 40s. And tomorrow, showers likely and possible thunderstorms, cloudy with highs in the 60s, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, overnight lows in the 50s.